You're with Len Vidopic on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Len Vidopic Show here on today's News Talk TNT. Coming up in this hour, we've got somebody who's genuinely funny. No offense to my previous guest who's still with me, actually, Danny Postel. It was intended to be ambiguous. But before we go to Danny, I've got a few questions here. Matt, it's too good an opportunity to let you go before you answer it. One of them is a political one. Alex says, get rid of the WEF, get rid of the WEF squawk. That's what we need to teach parrots. It's true. It's right too. Are you political, is the question.
I don't think I'm actually political. My father was in politics, so I watched him, and he was in local council in the days where he wasn't even paid to do that. And I watched him, everywhere he went became some sort of meeting, and the phone never stopped. And it was a very stressful life for him of service. And I do sadly think, and it's a comment you've made in one of your other shows, that a lot of people go into politics wanting to do good, but I don't know that they succeed very well because they get compromised by this system that is politics, that I know that I wouldn't like and I would fight against perhaps. So that's probably more where I see myself is probably being more of a watchdog in some ways, and I do some of the stories in my book, and my stories are getting more and more political, and especially now as I take it from a book series to a TV series and looking at podcasts, then I'm probably going to be more outspoken than I ever have been before. But I'm a bit of a rebel in that regard.
Are you outspoken on purpose, or is it just in your nature?
I think it's in my nature, and I probably do get that from my father. My mother was a school teacher. My father was a farmer and a local politician. So both of them were all about communication and big communicators. And a bit of a fight for the underdog. They were definitely Aussie battlers, as we call it here. So I certainly, even in my town here in Byron Bay that I then moved to, I grew up in the bush. Literally, I went to a primary school of 12 kids in the whole school, and then to a boarding school of 1,000 boys, then a film degree, which is the degree you do when you don't know what you want to do. And in those days, then basically all the yuppies went to Noosa, which is this beautiful town on the beach, and the party people went to the Gold Coast, surfers paradise, and all of us hippie alternative types came to Byron Bay. And I've been based here ever since, so 35 years. And people have often wanted me to run for mayor here and things like that, but I think in seeing what my father did and where that left him, and I've even had mates of mine that have been on council here, and one who's now left had gone back and studied law because he feels that he can do more fighting the system as a lawyer than he can as a politician.
The more you talk, the more I think you're a kind of cross between movie references coming up, Mad Max and Crocodile Dundee.
That's probably true. With my sense of humor, I've often said that I'm bored anyway, bring on the Armageddon, I'll just cut the roof off my Land Cruiser and put a machine gun on there, I'm ready to go.
and you can ride a bike.
Exactly.
Name the motorcycle in the original Mad Max which is used by the baddies.
That was Cutter, I think, was maybe the character's name. I'm trying to remember the type of bike.
I'll give you a clue. It was the superbike of the time in the late 70s.
Oh, well, my God. Well, what was it, a Goldwing of some sort? It certainly wasn't a Harley.
Yeah. You're nowhere close. It's Kawasaki Z1000.
I was going to say a Kawasaki, but I wasn't.
No, you weren't. No, you weren't.
I went with Honda instead, but yeah, Kawasaki.
Goldwing. I mean, you couldn't imagine hooligans on Goldwings. Come on.
Well,
it's like it's an armchair on two wheels.
Maxed it up, if you pimped it out, it would be pretty cool. You can imagine with all the fairings with studs and bullets and guns and the armory you could put
on a Goldwing. Less Mad Max and more Dad Max. right, a few comments here for you. This is why I kept you on, actually. You've been a bit of a hit with my guests, with my viewers here. Holly says, I like Matt. He's enthusiastic. Cheers, Matt. There's a compliment.
Thank you.
Mazzy says, cheers, Matt. Very good. And Just a Bloke says, nice, lively chat with a refreshing attitude to life. Great chat between two friends who share a passion for living. Thanks, Lembit and Matt. Yeah, because we go back a long way. We go back a long way. I couldn't tell you how far back we go back.
I think we do speak each other's unspoken language fluently.
We do. I second that emotion. It's not least about films. You've got them doing it now. Somebody's talking about Django, which is quite a good film. It's a bit repetitive, but I quite like it. Holly says, my parents ran a pub for many years. I blame my behavior on their customers. A lack of responsibility there, Holly. I've met Holly. She's turned out all right, I have to tell you, actually. And Majid says, Mad Max will become real. And it's ironic that Mel Gibson was the main actor. Mm. And Harley has never been a superbike, he adds. Oh, dear. Yeah. And Holly's accusing you, by inference, of a midlife crisis by going for a Goldwing. It's not quite how she put it, but I'm putting words in her mouth there.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely not getting on a Kawasaki 1000. It was a 250 that nearly killed me.
I know. It's when it comes to accidents, it isn't size that matters.
That's very true, especially with bikes.
I've only got another 5 minutes with you, but I wanted to ask you this question. It's a bit of a philosophical one, based partly on the chat. I haven't been able to read everything out. What would you say to people who would argue or suggest that your hedonistic lifestyle is ultimately pointless? Because you'll leave a warm trail behind, but like the fluorescence in the sea when the translucent animals sort of glow. Eventually, it's all gone.
Yeah, well, I suppose as a storyteller, if you look at any indigenous cultures, they handed down their stories from generation to generation. And that's what I'm trying to do with the book series that literally came about from my hospital bed, from my near-death experience, from those pearly gates. Because when I first left Australia at 21 years old, the best man at my father's wedding gave me a book called The Life and Crimes of Charles Sobry. If anyone's read that book, it's quite incredible. And it's been made into a TV series called The Scorpion, I think. Little did he know, because I was leaving Australia private schoolboy rugby player, that only a matter of years later I would be living in Bangkok as a gem dealer, which Charles Sobry did. I didn't murder tens of people like he did. He was a very charismatic Frenchman who's still in jail to this day, who lured lots of backpackers into his gem dealing factory apartment parties, and he was a serial killer. But the idea of him giving me that book was to be careful who you trust, no matter how charismatic they are. And not only in my book series is my story about be careful riding motorcycles. I have several others from canoeing the Amazon, from trekking the Andes, all sorts of different near fatalities that I've been pushed to myself to do for some strange reason, but to try and share that. And I have a lot of other friends now who have similar stories that are trying to share somehow, especially because a lot of us traveled in the days before the internet. It was a very different world, but there's different risks now. So even in what I've just experienced in London is a totally different type of warning, I suppose, for people who are either getting on a plane for the first time or maybe are living vicariously now through our stories. But a story lives on forever. And that, I suppose, is the legacy in some way of how storytelling should continue to evolve in whatever format that is.
Harley, who insists on calling me Lamb Chop, which I think under Scottish hate laws means she'll have to go to prison for 10 years because she obviously hates lambs. Ollie says, I had a Kawasaki DT175. I fell off it a lot. I used to have a DT175. But was that Kawasaki? I thought that was a Yamaha. But there we are. Maybe you're right. Nice single cylinder thing, two stroke, as far as I recall. The other part to what you've said there, and it was quite a good eulogy for living life to the full, Matt, is this. Some people don't live life at all because of fear of getting things wrong. Mm. I know that, and I've made so many mistakes, and you've researched many of them before the show, thank you. but the fact is that you learn from those and it teaches you humility. My biggest worry about politics now is that you get vanilla sky politicians who've never done anything else. They they're terrified of going of doing anything unusual, and they probably haven't done the interesting and the sometimes illegal things that many people have done. And as a result, they don't really understand the human condition. Mm. I think Britain is sinking because we've just got a class of politicians who've never done anything else. Why don't you go into politics?
It has been suggested my whole life. The older I get, actually, I do start to get more uppity, which is maybe what politicians need. It's a good question. I'm seeing where this book series, TV series, takes me next, and it may be that it becomes more of a podcast, which I think is a great forum, and probably exactly what you do, which you've done both sides of the fence in politics. You can certainly, you're in that decision-making process, but you're now on the fence being able to look at public opinion. And I think both sides are very relevant. And I think that's a very noble profession, both sides of that debate. That's what we're doing. We're trying to debate the human condition and the human path that we're trying to do as a collective, which is getting harder and harder when you look globally as to what's happening.
I was weeding. I've got a reasonably big garden. I was weeding the flower bed. I was putting potatoes in, looking into the greenhouse, working out how many tomatoes I could get. And I suddenly realized something. You become your father. You just do. It's Darth Vader or Obi-Wan. You just become your father. You are going to become a politician because you're going to turn into your dad.
Yeah, well, rockin' Rod. He's still rocking. So, at 88, he's a character. So, funnily enough, speaking of parents and going back to the motorbikes, my mother, may she rest in peace. We had a rule on our farm. Well, it was my mother's rule. My father was a big John Wayne fan. If he had his way, we would have been on 1,000 acres in the middle of nowhere so he could wear the big hat and ride the horse. But she wouldn't go more than an hour from a capital city, thankfully. But she had a rule, no motorbikes and no guns. We grew up in this valley in a primary school, 20 kids in the whole school. Everyone had motorbikes and guns. And I understand the no guns thing. I don't really regret not killing things as a kid. But the motorbike thing, of course, then as soon as I could, I left Australia at 21. I didn't start riding motorbikes until I got to Thailand and Indonesia, where you could just hire a bike and they don't care whether you can ride or you're not. And you're off down the street learning precariously. And all through my travels, that's the only time I ride bikes. And I refused to, in the old days, it was all dirt bikes. And then when scooters came in, I still will only hire a bike because I actually do want to learn. But that's how I learnt, and obviously didn't learn well enough to save myself from a near-death experience because I hadn't been taught as a child and not having children myself, but caring for a lot of them. I do think, especially if there's a kid that has that spunk that's going to want to do adventures, it's important to learn to do anything properly. And learning how to ride a motorbike properly, like everything from a young age, is a hell of a lot easier, whether you ever do it or not, whether that's surfing, guitar, all the sort of things that take that patience, that time and energy to learn properly. I do think that doing that is probably important. And then on a political soapbox, I did think about fighting that system because still to this day, there's an Australian alone dies every day on a motorcycle in Southeast Asia, let alone the whole world. And yet still to this day, anyone can hire a bike and they don't care whether you've got a license or you don't, or you can ride or you don't. And there's still people dying more and more every day on those roads, which is a political quagmire.
Spyro Gyro had the Yamaha RD200, still one of the most underrated bikes ever. So I think it had electric start. So many comments about motorcycles. FS1E, remember the old Fizzy? I don't want to go too far. I don't have a mass turn off now, but lots of comments about bikes. Thing is, you are fizzing yourself. It's great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for staying a little bit longer.
My pleasure.
We can have a latte in London or a beer in Byron, whatever you like. just let me know. Real pleasure to have you on. Hope you've enjoyed the experience. You certainly have. Yeah. That was Matt Towner in Byron Bay. I recommend it.
Hey, come on down.
And it'll cost you a beer. I'll do it for exactly. you. I'll be your agent. I'll take 20%. I'll get one beer for every five. Thanks so much. That is Matt Towner. Coming up next, we've got a true comedian, somebody who does impersonations probably even better than me. Is that possible? You'll find out here on the Len Potopic Show on today's News Talk. I'll see you in a minute.
TNT's Kate Shimarani.
You have to be very, very careful with pregnant women when giving them drugs, or women that are breastfeeding, because those drugs will be carried in the breast milk. So why are biological men being given drugs to produce milk, breast milk, that's being fed to the babies in the premature baby unit, SCABU? And they've actually said it's as good as women's milk. I don't see how that is possible, because those drugs that will stimulate the pituitary and everything else that this man is taking are going to be in that breast milk. What could possibly go wrong?
Kate Shimarani on today's News Talk, TNT. TNTRadio.live, today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. The time is flying today here on the Len Potopic Show on today's News Talk TNT. Big thank you to my previous guest there, Matt Towner, who is a self-professed adrenaline junkie, and also a philosopher from the University of Life, I think. Before we go to my next guest, let me read some messages. You people are far more interested in motorbikes than I realized. Madrid said, sorry, yes, I think it was a 200 because they also did a 400 Yamaha. Well, yes, I used to have a Yamaha RD400. It was actually had a shot, really bad crankshaft, but it was super fast when it worked. Lots of debate about motorbikes. I recommend anyone who's interested in bikes go to tntradio.live and have a look, because I don't want to over-specialize in our discussion here. And Mazzy says, it's a talent to fix anything, let alone motorbikes. Brilliant, Matt. Yes, I agree. Shorty222 said, my first husband had a GSX 750, second had a Massey Ferguson, only married twice. Okay. Massey Ferguson, aka Harley Davidson with more wheels. I don't really apologize if you've got a Harley Davidson. You've had all of the criticisms. Madrid adds, I love my children and they are my inspiration. I tend to agree. I find that the same from my kids. Mally Bites says, oh, hi, Mally. I'm glad to see you here. I'm from a farming background and used to use rifles and so on from maybe as young as my early teens for the rabbits, etc., plus driving tractors on the road during harvest at around 16, and had many crosser bikes, were what we used to call them. All good fun and a great childhood. That is the case. My six-year-old loves Minecraft. Would I have done the same at her age now? Doubt it. I could be wrong. Minecraft, it's not real. Children everywhere, it's not real. Get out there, get wet, go for a walk, do things. Don't live in Minecraft. And Mally Bite sums up my last guest. He's a great guest, Lembit. Thank you. I certainly second that. We'll definitely have Matt on again. I think we've got lots more to learn from him. The continuing adventures of Matt Towner. Well, the continuing adventures of Lembitopic show as well now. We have somebody who is possibly even funnier than me. Is it possible? There's Danny Postel. Welcome, Danny. Welcome to the show. How are you?
How are you, Lembit? I'm good. Well, this is the first time we've met since I was about 16. But you probably won't remember, because you were canvassing for the Liberal Democrats in Hartlepool, and I was on work experience for the Hartlepool Mail, and we obviously were covering a story, and I turned up, and I can't remember, it was like near the high street in Hartlepool, and you were basically trying to get me involved, and at the time I didn't know nothing about politics, you know, so I've had no interest at all, but that was a long time ago when I had hair, you know, so, but it's good to see you again. You probably obviously don't remember.
I've thought of little else in the intervening years. I've thought of little else. I just thought, when am I going to get to see Danny again? Since Jodie Dunn, she was the candidate.
Jodie Dunn was the candidate. I can imagine you had sleepless nights over it, to be honest.
Yeah, every time the phone goes, I think, oh, maybe it's Danny. I'll have to take it. Yeah. You know, I hadn't saved your number. But at last, exactly. My dreams come true. it was the candidate was Jodie Dunn. I remember that campaign very well. And it was a by-election. Yeah, she was great. Nearly won, actually. Made a mistake. She made a mistake on social media, which cost her the seat, as far as I recall. And actually, you came to, yeah, we were always, I was always trying to recruit people, including you, because the Lib Dems were desperate to get new people. You say you don't know anything about politics, then you were perfectly qualified to join the Lib Dems. I can say that you can't. but you've taken the more productive line in your life. Tell us what you do now.
Well, obviously, I'm a comedy impressionist now. I haven't been for the past week because I'm getting over a throat infection. But back working tomorrow. I fly to Crete tomorrow to do a gig, doing a Sensatori hotel. So it's good. Obviously, with politics now as well, I think doing impressions got me involved in politics. Because I had a phone call from an agent at the time, and she said, "Do you do Donald Trump?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Well, can you? You've got a week to learn him because there's a gig going for you, and it's in a boxing ring, and it's a rap battle between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton." And that was the 2016 election. And ever since then, my repertoire has just built up and built up with politicians because they just come out at you, you know. And one in particular that you just can't ignore, and one of the best impressions that people say that I do, well, that's, you know, videos that have gone viral online, has got to be Diane Abbott. Because what I like about Diane is the fact that whenever she answers a question, she literally closes her eyes or looks up to the ceiling trying to find the answer that's clearly never there. And they go like from one end of the spectrum to another, you know, and because obviously you got people like Diane Abbott, and then of course you have people like Jacob Rees-Mogg, who is also now on GB News. And when I listen to Jacob, I just think to myself, even Prince Charles would look at you and think, "Holy crap! Compared to you, I sound like I'm from a council estate," you know. And they've just got these mannerisms that come out at you, you know, and you can't ignore them.
Do a Trump, then. I love the way Trump talks. People don't realize half the time he's being ironic. He is a gift that keeps on giving to the comedy world. Go on, then. How good's a Trump?
Well, you know, everybody knows that when you do Donald, it's very important that you have to make everything spectacular. Everything's fantastic. Everything's great. You know, whatever I do is going to be great. It's going to be huge. It's going to be so great. And what I also love is he looks like, with his hands, he looks like he's squeezing a ball. Very important. You know, you squeeze that ball and then it gets even harder and it deflates and inflates. And then it comes back and then you go back again and it's so great. And he looks like he's straining for a huge poop. You got to get the face right. Very important.
You clearly have got into politics. I sometimes do a Trump myself. I'm not going to do it in competition with you because you're making money.
Oh, come on. I want to hear it now. You said that.
I give myself an A+. But I'm not going to go any further. You're so much better than me.
Was really great. That was so great. It was not fake news. You know, one of my favorite words that Trump says, one of my favorite things that Trump says has got to be China. The way he says China, so great.
Can you do, I have trouble with impersonating. I used to do this show called Cats and Dogs, and I used to have to impersonate people. The one I could never do is Obama, but I also struggled with Biden because you just end up having to speak slowly. Can you do a Biden? Have you succeeded? Have you perfected it?
I think with Joe Biden, he just looks like your grandma who's basically trying to watch the TV when she can't find her glasses. Do you know what I mean? Like, so he's got this.
hey, come on, man, what's going on?
It's like, that's all I can sort of do with as Biden. He's got sort of, and he just comes out with just random words, you know? Like, you could be mid-sentence with Joe Biden, and then you could see something in the room and then just blurt out that word, you know? Like, so for example, if I'm talking about something,
hey, you know, the most important thing about globalism right now is Lempsip.
You know, like, he just blurts something out, and you go, where did that come from, you know?
Repeat quote, end of quote. My favorite quote of his ever, which I probably mention once every 3 weeks in the on the show, is poor kids can do just as well as white kids. I mean, it's beautiful.
I know.
I mean, it's amazing.
And yeah, the whole racism thing that people go on about, and these people are backing him, and you're going, whoa, hang on, you know. Nothing like a contradiction, is there? But then there's someone else I've been doing recently. And one of my favorite people I like to do is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And he was originally Democrat. And a lot of people could say, you know, they were comparing him to Bill Clinton. And people say that Bill loves to play the saxophone when we all know that he preferred the harmonica.
How long did it take you to get your repertoire to the state that people will pay you to go to Crete, which is probably one of my two favorite islands in the whole of Greece? But how
it's
long
beautiful,
did it take you to get
it?
This good? Yeah, it is. I prefer it to just about any other one. Yeah.
Well, it's just, I think when you start doing impressions, I think one of the main things in comedy, sorry, I'll just move this back. One of the main things in comedy is talk about what you know. And people say to me, you know, do you do golfers? Do you do this? Do you do that? And I'm like, well, I don't, because I don't watch it enough. But I think since I started watching a lot of politicians, they've just, you know, they come out that, yeah. And I'm not one of these impressionists like Alistair McGowan who will dissect everything and go into detail with stuff, you know. I basically just watch people, it comes to me, and then I do. Funnily enough, Alistair came to see me the other week. I was doing a gig in Ludlow, and he came to see the show, and he was really complimenting me. And to me, I think he's the best that's ever done it, you know, on with regards to doing stand-up as well. If you watch impressionists who do stand-up, I think Alistair is probably the best I've seen, you know, so that was a huge compliment coming from him. But yeah, I just think I've always been fascinated by voices. I've always been fascinated by how people conduct themselves with their voice and how their voice can have an impact on how people judge them, you know? And, you know, like, for example, when I'm going back to the Reece Mogg thing, you know, people listen to him and go, well, how can he represent working class people when he speaks like that? When in actual fact, if you delve into it and you listen to his politics, he actually does, you know? But it is really interesting how people can judge someone based on their voice.
Now, the way you moved your camera, it looks like you've got this massive hall. It actually seems like you're on a bus because it goes up and down all the time. Are you already going to Luton Airport?
There we go.
That's perfect now, I think. I know that I have to say that I admire you. I did professional stand-up for 2 years, but I packed it in. And the reason I packed it in, I still do a little bit, but I couldn't stand the strain of it. Because when you're doing politics and people rubbish you, you go, well, they don't like my ideas. But when it's stand-up, it's you they're judging. It's you, the whole of you.
It's very personal.
Yeah. I don't know how you do this regularly, because I just used to – I've worked with Jack D, Rod Gilbert, a lot of them, I admired the fact that they had the stamina to put up with the bad gigs. A good gig is brilliant. You know what that feels like. But a bad gig, it's crushing.
See, to me, I think comedy clubs are great. Theatres are great. When it comes to corporate events, they're the ones where you go, are these people going to like me? They're not here to see me. By 8, 9 o'clock, generally they're drunk. So by the time you go on, you know, it's like, well, okay, if they like me, it's great. Then, you know, you've got to really hit them hard as well. They don't give you any breathing space. You've got to go on and you've got to really command the stage when you do a corporate event. Which, to be fair, I quite enjoy them because, I mean, I've been doing quite a lot of corporates recently, doing a lot of sporting events as well. And it's weird because I don't really do many sports people. I mean, I do people like Conor McGregor, you know, because I'm a huge UFC fan, you know, so throwing him in the act is great, you know, and you probably don't know who Conor McGregor is by the look of your face, you know.
You might say that.
It's one of them, but when you do impressions of people who everyone knows, for example, Michael McIntyre, he's one of my favourites. There's a lot to play with Michael's voice, and, you know, you could basically adapt a Michael impression to any particular sporting event. For example, he could have been a boxer because of the movement of the head. You know, that's very important in boxing, the movement, you know. So what you can do is adapt people's mannerisms to whatever sort of sport there could be, you know. But I started off really impersonating a lot of comics because I love stand-up comedy. And when I spoke to Alistair McGowan, I mean, he's always done impressions of people like Milton Jones. And then when they become famous, he's like, oh, I can put them in the act now. You know, I've always been able to do them, so I'll just throw them in the act.
Yeah. I have to say, you're causing a lot of debate. Let me read some of the comments coming in here. I always like to include my audience so that I don't lose my audience. It's easier this way, though, because if they're booing, I can't hear them. That's the difference, Danny. they sometimes use capitals, which is a bit like booing, I think.
All right, okay.
Right. Let's see. Here we go. Hemingway says, Hemingway, who is a bit of a satirist himself or herself, I don't know, gender here.
Yeah.
Hemingway says, Diane Abbott spoke with extraordinary depth during the recent Women's History Month. During Women's History Month, we honour the women who made history throughout history. We must honour these women, these historical women who made history. That's what she's like, though. She's just...
Yeah, I know.
It's unbelievable to me that she's done so well in politics. It just stuns me, really.
Yeah, it's frightening. I mean, I've had comments on social media. Basically, someone said that I was a racist for doing an impression of her. And I just said, okay. I mean, I generally just don't reply to them. And I just said, racist, how? And they went, duh, a white man impersonating a black woman. I said, all right, okay. I said, so I'm not allowed to impersonate anyone who's a different colour skin to me. And they said, yeah. I said, well, you're the racist then.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
You know.
I take men can't impersonate women then. And what about short people impersonating tall people? It's ridiculous. Holly says, I met Alistair McGann at... Holly says, I met Alistair McGowan at a wedding. He was very grouchy. There we are.
Grouchy?
Yeah.
Really? He's always been...
Go on.
After you. No, he's always been a nice bloke. I mean, I remember when I was on there, just before the final, Britain's Got Talent, he left me a voicemail, and he was just, you know, wishing me all the best, and he loved me semi-final, you know, and he was just a really nice guy. I've always found him a very nice bloke, to be honest. So grouchy, okay.
I have to say, when I was doing stand-up, I did find some of the characters, I won't name them now, but I'll tell you privately some other time. I found some of them were very different in real life to the way that they were on stage. And one or two of them are really disappointing people. And there's a famous American actor who used to drink in my local pub when I lived in central London. And he was always so rude to anybody who went up to him, apart from his little entourage. I don't like that, because when you make money out of the public, you have to give them something back, in my view.
That's one thing I've never understood.
Yeah, they resent people in the public eye who resent the public. Go and do something else. Be a lighthouse keeper, you know.
Exactly, yeah. Just stay away from everyone.
Yeah, or farm the outback or something. Here's another one. Holly says, especially, this is about my paranoia about stand-up, especially when the audience suddenly is laughing at you and not with you. Holly, are you trying to tell me something? Are you trying to tell me something?
You've never been to one of your gigs, actually, or could have been one of mine. You never know.
It could be. Oh, yeah, it could be. Madrid says, Bernard Manning, his club, he controlled it. Imagine Bernard Manning now, says Holly. Yeah, it'd be tricky to get past the censors. These days.
Yeah.
To what extent?
That's another thing. Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, in the next, after the break, I'll let you reply now. But after the break, I want to talk to you about the relationship between comedy and politics and whether you think things actually gone downhill a bit. Don't answer that now, though. You're going to say something else before we go to the break.
Yeah, I was just saying political correctness. That's another thing, you know. Obviously, there's so many boundaries in comedy now, which makes it more difficult to be more creative, because when you have restriction on creativity, it affects a performer, really, and they can't perform to their full potential.
In case someone's offended.
Yeah.
Just a Bloke says, I remember seeing Jack D in Reading years ago when he was supported by the then unknown Lee Evans. Jack D followed with, well, he was rubbish, wasn't he? But was it intended to be ironic? there we go. This is the problem, though. Everyone's got a different sense of humour. And one person...
Of course they have.
Comedy meat is another person's miserable poison. And Matty Bice says, our sense of humour is one thing they can never take from us. When I was in the military, I was the one that could get our fellow muckers laughing when times are bad. And in life, we need to see the funny side or else we would all go mad. As long as Matty Bice, you weren't the general saying over the top and they all started laughing. But there we go. Right, so stay with us. Danny, I want to ask you about the relationship between politics and censorship and humour. All of that with me, Len Bitopic, here on today's News Talk TNT. I'll see you in a minute.
Sometimes a car comes along that changes everything, with innovations never thought possible and features that make you wonder, how did people survive without this? This is that time, and this is that car. This is the world's first VW Bee. equipped with transparent doors to eliminate reasonable suspicion, whatever that means. A 10-2 steering wheel that keeps hands visible at all times. We remove the glove box so there's no confusion about what the driver is reaching for. With a touch of a button, the ultrasonic biometric scanner displays the license and registration of the driver to ensure contactless exchange of information. With no trunk, nothing can be concealed, so therefore, there is nothing to search and seize. To ensure you will never be mistaken for breaking the speed limit, we've installed limited edition airless tires. And we removed the engine because, honestly, why risk it? DWB, the first vehicle of its kind, where the safety feature is the car itself.
I have a feeling these are the suspects in question. The two occupants look like the people involved in the armed robbery. I'm approaching the vehicle. Request backup. The driver matches the description because of a wide-set nose.
The Kids Cancer Project funds vital research into childhood cancers. And you fund the Kids Cancer Project. Funding research means giving children back their lives. And who knows what kids with cancer could grow up to do? The Kids Cancer Project. Survival starts with science. Donate now.
The Kids Cancer Project.
You're with Len Bedovic on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Len Bedovic Show here on today's News Talk TNT. If only you could hear the discussions during the break. It's not broadcastable, I can tell you. But I have a sense now, Danny, that not everything you say is completely not blue. Once the children go to bed, I suspect you take liberties. but you see,
absolutely.
Can you still do this? This is what I wanted to ask you about. As a comedian now, you walk a tightrope. In Scotland, you could be accused of hate crime if you ridicule somebody on the basis of their gender or their ethnicity and so on, or pretty much any defining feature. How do you feel our liberty in the comedy world is being valued, or has it been harmed by all this wokeness?
Do you know what I find is you do any jokes about the left, you demonize. You do any jokes about a conservative or any of those type political figures, it's fine. You're deemed as sort of quite cool. According to the, I would say it's the minority, because a lot of people who you speak to, they just want to hear your jokes. They don't care, what side of the political fence you're on. But there are a certain group of people who try and demonize you for making a joke. Well, what they're saying is you're punching down. When I think it's rubbish, really, because, someone said to me before when I'd done an impression of Diane, I've been going back to that one, that, I'm showing my white supremacy when she probably earns a lot more money than I do, But isn't it weird, right? I could do an impression of Rishi Sunak or Priti Patel, but if I do an impression of, for example, when I do Rishi, he looks like he's constantly going fishing. That's what I love about Rishi Sunak. You can do an impression of him, but because he's a conservative, you won't get called a racist. That's one thing that confuses me. And I'm just like, just do jokes about everything. Because I just think it's a term of endearment, If my mates didn't make fun of me, I'd be thinking there's something wrong with them. Obviously I'm bald. I take the mick out of myself for being bald, but then I take it as a positive and I just think, well, I look the same now as I will when I'm 70, because obviously I'm not going to go, I just use Just For Men on my eyebrows and I look the same and I won't age, that this is me now, but I just think it's, I just think there's certain rules now of who you can joke about and I just think it's rubbish.
In my experience of stand-up and the comedy world, they're two interesting features, and they almost sound contradictory. On the one side, you get very few right-wing comedians. On the other side, you get very few right-wing people who are offended by comedy. So the right doesn't generate many comedians, but they do seem to be able to laugh at themselves. Meanwhile, the left produces lots of comedians, but they seem to be humorless. and they seem to take everything literally. And
you know,
so you shouldn't be saying that. I know you can't talk about them. You know, our brothers and sisters and others, non-specified. And you just begin to think, what is happening here? Go on.
Well, do you know, it's funny. I was out in America for 5 weeks on holiday, and I'd done a couple of clubs out there. I didn't get paid for it. I just wanted to see how I would go with an American audience. And they were great. I really enjoyed it. One was the Throckmorton Theatre in Mill Valley in California. They were great. They were lovely. They were like very, because I said to the guy, I went, look, I heard if I do an impression of Trump and Biden, will I split the room? And they were like, no, they're here for comedy, mate. You just enjoy it, you know? He said, they're mostly conservatives anyway. They can laugh at themselves. I went, okay, that's fine. Then I'd done Oakland Comedy Club, which, to be fair, a week later I was in Chicago, and then I found out there was a mass shooting not far from where I'd done the gig, which, you know, that was a bit of a lucky escape. And they were very sort of more to the left. And when I done an impression of Joe Biden, they didn't particularly like it. But when I done Trump, they were like, oh, that's brilliant. And I'm like, come on, it's comedy, you know? I'm taking the mick out of both sides here, you know? Yeah. So it's just, you're right, it's just the contradictory side of it. And I think when I was in California, when I was in Los Angeles in particular, I found people so sensitive there. I mean, I was in a bar in, and this is a joke, and what I was getting at is that a comic who I was talking to in Oakland said, the more conservative an audience is, the more you can get away with, which I find to be true, you know? And people could just say, oh, yeah, well, you're having a stab at the left. I'm not. I'm just stating what I see when I'm doing gigs. Yeah. But I was in Venice Beach, and I was with my ex-wife, and there was an offer on these drinks. It was two cocktails for $20. So I went to the bar and I said, hello, mate. I said, can I have two margaritas, please? And he looked at me and he went, mate. I went, oh, sorry. I said, in England, that's sort of a term of endearment. I said, I didn't mean to upset you. What? He was like, you know, the next thing he said, how dare you assume my gender, right? And I was like, okay, here we go. This is going to get me in trouble. Regardless of how I deal with this, I'm in trouble because he's just said that trigger word, right? So, I says, well, look, he says, excuse me, I'm speaking. I was like, oh, I thought, you wind me up now, mate, right? He went, I identify as non-binary. I said, okay. I said, well, look, I didn't mean to upset you. I said, can I just please have two margaritas? And even the people around me were looking at me like I'd done something wrong when I knew I didn't do anything wrong. Anyway, he's gone away. He's made the drinks. He's come back and he's put them on the table. He said, they'll be $20. So I put $5 down. He said, that's $5. That's not enough. I said, no, but it identifies as 20, right? We got thrown out.
Did he actually do that?
Because, yeah. And the thing is, I'd done it to prove a point, to make it just show how ridiculous he sounded by saying that to me.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like they want to start an argument about it when it's not even there and it doesn't even exist.
I went to Dallas for the Total Solar Eclipse a few weeks ago. In fact, I broadcast my show from there. And my plane was really, really late, and the connection hadn't been sorted out. So I went up to American Airlines stand. The whole story is too long to explain. But the lady behind the desk thought that me using the phrase "you people" was a racist slur. I pointed at the American Airlines sign, said, "You people need to fix this." And she willfully chose that to be a racist slur, made me rephrase it as in, you, the employees of American Airlines.
This is the thing. People try and make a point of, you know, trying to find racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, where it doesn't even exist. And that's where the problem lies, you know. Most people, if someone wants to be trans, I'm cool with that. You be who you want to be. But I'm not, you know, I don't go out of my way to upset people. I feel like they go out of their way to be offended.
Yeah.
You know?
There's quite a lot of comment on this in the talk. I'll read those out after the break because I don't want to miss out on talking with Danny. It seems to me that you've summed it up there. One doesn't have to set out to offend people, but people end up choosing to be offended. And so we end up in a situation where it takes very little for someone to make a complaint. And and what's tragic about it is it actually stifles free speech through the back door. And then on top of that, we've got all the other political correctness where like, as I say, in Scotland now, it's very hard to understand what you can say, with J.K. Rowling making a valiant one person stand against it. But all the time, people being harangued for innocent comments, which an 80-year-old will say, or 70-year-old will say from his or her heritage, which is now illegal. I wonder, basically, if we've actually dumbed down society by protecting people,
here's a question for you, right? If that rule existed in England, how many grandparents would end up getting arrested on Christmas Day by saying something that in their generation was okay, that they said over Christmas dinner that their grandchild got offended by and rang the police about? You know, I mean, can you imagine all these 80-year-olds getting taken away in handcuffs? Well, what did they say? Well, they mentioned a word that, you know, was at Christmas dinner that, you know, wouldn't have upset anyone if they didn't hear it, apart from their own family, you know? It's just, where do you draw the line? That's the problem.
But the good thing is they'll meet their friends, their mates in prison, because their mates will be in prison as 70-year-olds because they were 1 year too young to buy cigarettes because of the new rule. So
exactly.
The prison will be full of 70-year-olds who are 1 year too young to buy a packet of fags, together with all the other 70-year-olds who've offended their grandchildren on the basis of not understanding what non-binary means.
Oh, I know. It's frightening, isn't it? And it's happening so quickly, though. It's not like it's happened over a 20-year period. It's happened, like, over, say, the past 5 years. And it's obviously during the COVID. I think during COVID, everyone was online. That was the most vicious time to be online, was during COVID, because no one else had anything else to do. And everyone was annoyed because they were locked up in their houses or wherever they were living, and then everyone was just annoyed. They were all skint. They had no money because no one could go to work, you know, unless obviously they were working from home. And everyone's mental health was screwed. So what they decided to do was, you know, let's go online and let's all, you know, have a go at each other for everything, and let's have the offended word brought into it. Yeah. And we're going to be offended by more things than we used to.
Yeah, well, it is. It's like a menu of offence, which has been enshrined into law in Scotland, at least. Where are you living now?
I live in Hartlepool.
You're still in Hartlepool? My heart goes out to you. Why?
No, honestly, I love it there. It's a very working class town. I mean, we've still got that mentality in Hartlepool where it's fine to just rip each other to bits, you know, when we're in the pub. And it's a very, you know, working class sense of humor that we have, you know, and I just think it's a place I love to live. I mean, the way certain places are in this country now, if I do gigs there, I'm in and out. I just want to get home, you know. And you could sort of say that I'm a sort of little Englander, if you like, but no, I just like where I live. I like where I was brought up. I like my friends, and I love living here. It's just the way I am, you know. And when you see and change, people might say, "Oh, you can't handle change." Well, I can. But it's whether I like it or not, you know? And that's why I like living in Hartlepool.
Because it never changes.
Houses, and you can get houses from the pound shop, so, you know.
You made a terrible mistake some years ago, though. You talked about your baldness, but if you joined the Lib Dems when I asked you, you wouldn't be bald now, and you can't prove otherwise.
Oh, absolutely. That would have been the case, you know? Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's crazy as well, isn't it? I mean, we had a Labour seat for how many years? Since the 60s.
Yeah.
And then what they thought they would do is they thought they'd go, everyone in Hartlepool are all thick and working class. Yeah. They won't know. What we'll do is we'll send Paul Williams to stand for us, who wanted a second referendum, who tried to stop Brexit when Hartlepool was a 70% Leave vote. They won't know. They're all thick and working class. I mean, the Tories are someone who Hartlepool couldn't stand, but we basically done a protest vote to get the Tories in. And they never thought that would ever happen because they just thought, they just got too comfortable with us. And that was a massive insult to the people of Hartlepool, you know?
You've got Jill Mortimer, Conservative now. Is it Jill Mortimer?
Jill Mortimer, yeah.
I knew the guy who beat, this could be wrong, was it Ian Wright who beat Jodie Dunn? I can't remember now.
I think so,
Hang on, I could look it up, but I don't want to look at, I don't want to waste time on it. But basically, Ian Wright. Yeah, he won the by-election. He was a very nice bloke, actually. I always gone very well with him. The reason I asked you about where you live is because, do you think that Hartlepool still, to what extent, let me ask you an open question, to what extent do you think Hartlepool's been touched by wokeness?
Not very at all. That's why I like living here. You know, most people I speak to, it's funny, I was talking to another comedian on the circuit, I won't mention her name, but she said to me, thing is, Danny, it's very important that you use people's pronouns. You need to discuss this with the younger generation, because my daughter says to me, mummy, she used the word mummy. I mean, that's a giveaway, isn't it? Mummy, mummy, you must... Mummy.
How dare you? I'm
mummy,
a lady.
You must understand that, you know, you must get people's pronouns right. I went, oh, really? She said, yeah. She said, you need to discuss this with the younger generation. I said, okay. I said, well, I'll speak to my younger brother, Tom. Anyway, I had a chat with our Tom, and our Tom went, well, no, we don't really take that into account. You know, if you're a man, you're a man. If you're a woman, you're a woman. And if you decide to have a sex change, it's your issue, and it is what it is. And I told her this, and she says, well, what does he do, your brother? And I said, he's a scaffolder. She went, oh, well, I rest my case. And I'm like, hang on. You're discriminating against people like me and my brother now, you know? It's like, talk about the contradiction.
Let me read some questions. I have to look down to look at the screen here, but you've got to hear these. One is, some little Carol says, some people are frightened to death of having a nice time and being happy. I don't agree with that. Holly says, well, I shall be at the rugby club later for the last game of the season. Nothing politically correct going on there yet. Chris says, a bit late, but Alistair McGowan is an avid net zero supporter. Boo to that. Holly says, can you do an impression of a northerner from Hartlepool then?
A northerner from Hartlepool. They clearly haven't been listening to this for the past. Yeah, I mean, you get. I mean, people from Hartlepool, I've lost my accent a little bit because I'm travelling and stuff, doing gigs. Otherwise, if I spoke like proper Hartlepool like that, like, no one would be able to really understand me. Like, they have this sort of, but it's, we call them chavs, you know. So you've just sort of got to sound a bit more common and, like, you know, bring your accent a bit more.
Sounds exactly the same to me as the way you were talking before.
All right, okay.
Malibite says, could you ask the guest if he owns a whippet? and does he wear a flat cap or at least own one? Malibite is probably Welsh, but I put that accent on for effect. You've got 10 seconds to answer. Whippet and flat cap?
Whippet and flat cap. Do you know, it's funny because I love wearing my flat cap. It's always, since I lost my hair, I've always worn it, to be honest. But funnily enough, I love going to, my family have always loved going to the dog racing and the horse racing. My cousin's a jockey, funnily enough, Tony Hamilton. So we sort of love that side of life as well. So, you know, they were very close.
You have a good flight. Enjoy your time out there. It's great to see someone like you being able to go to a posh hotel, no offence. And
when I walk in, I'm like, I'm not welcome here. You know? Well, and then when they find out I'm entertaining, they're like, oh, golly, you know.
You've been there, probably stronger than that. Very welcome on my show. You'll be back. Tell us how it goes. That was Danny. Fantastic going across to Crete. Coming up next, we've got Ash Mahmood, all about films, here on the Lembitopic Show, TNT. See you in a few minutes.